0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe with RT.ie, an insurance claim. The damage to the car was just over €400. €400, and anyone who has a car knows a scratch will cost you €400 to get fixed. And the person who tipped into the other car has just got a bill from the insurance company, wait for it, not of €400, but of €40,000. The bill has gone up 100-fold from the original claim. Cormac, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Am I reading out those figures correctly?
100%, Joe.
What happened?
My son, Joe, had a minor accident.
Okay.
The car in front of him cut in him, and he hit the back of it, which you can't do.
Okay.
He was, a guard the car was passing.
Okay.
And they stopped and they came over and the two men in question, my son and another man,
yeah,
decided that my son would fix his car.
Okay.
And the guard said, are you happy at that? And the two men shook hands, gentleman's agreement.
Okay.
And they shook hands and the guard said, you're all okay. And they drove on, which they were entitled to do, because they intervened and they were sent away and everything was fine.
And what was the damage to the injured party's car, so to speak?
Very little, Joe. It cost €425.58.
To get fixed?
To get fixed.
Okay.
But my son contacted the injured party a few times to know how much it was.
Yeah.
And they spoke for a few times, and next thing is then he couldn't make no more contact with him, but he got a text saying that he was going to his solicitor.
Okay.
So,
which is
after
entitled
that
to
then, yes, yes, and it went on then, and everything was, he didn't know what was happening until he got this letter. And I can read out the list of fees and all, if you want.
Yeah, please do. Please do, because anyway, let people make their own mind up.
Yeah.
But we have a situation where damage to the other vehicle, which was admitted by your son, was just over €400. They shook hands on the street. Your son offered to get it fixed. I don't know whether it was a scratch or it's not much for €400. And that is the final agreed damage done to the car, according to the insurance company and the injured party and everyone else involved. €425.58. Okay. Now, how did £425.58, how did your son, through his policy, through his insurance, already paid, how did your son's insurance company pay out €39,924.53, a hundredfold it's gone up. What happened in the meantime? Break it down for me.
I will indeed, Joe, and thank you. First of all, he got the letter about 3 weeks ago, and since he got that letter, I can hardly sleep at night with the personal injuries, 15,000.
Okay.
Own solicitor, which is the insurance solicitor. Now, I'm sorry to say, just to get this right, there was no court case. My son got no solicitor.
Okay.
But this is their own solicitor. Got €7,379.65. Now, third-party solicitor, which is his solicitor.
Yeah.
I'd take a no joke because I need to get this right.
Take your time, yeah.
He got, the third party solicitor got €15,920.05.
5 cents, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Investigation fees, €584.25.
That's not much of an investigation, in fairness. That's a couple of hours at most, or a bit of paperwork.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Yeah. And other fees then, Joe Duffy, €615.
So first of all, let's look at the figures. The legal fees, they say own solicitor, even though your son did not employ a solicitor,
no.
didn't have any dealings with a solicitor.
No,
but they mean
no.
the insurance company solicitor.
Exactly.
That came to nearly 7,500.
Exactly.
The injured party, who we now know was given 15 grand for a personal injury.
Yes.
But the injured party solicitor got 16,000.
Exactly.
So solicitor's fees for a car that was damaged to the tune of €425, solicitor's fees are basically 24,000 euro. 24,000
exactly.
euro for a case that did not even go to court.
That did not go to court.
Okay. Now, have you phoned the insurance company?
I tried phoning them and I get... it comes on to say your car, and then it cuts off.
They say, please be assured.
Yes.
Please be assured that we have settled this claim on the best possible terms.
That's the sickening part.
The settlement of this claim may affect your future motor insurance premiums. You bet it will.
Yeah.
This depends on the extent of any of your claims experience to date and your no claims discount protection if applicable.
That's it, Joe.
And how was your son when he saw this figure?
Well, actually, Joe, he's over now in Sweden.
Well, he's better off. Cool down. Vehicle damage, 400. But what was the damage to the car, do you know?
Joe, it was very little. Because that's why he said, look, it's not going to cost much to get it fixed, like.
And the Gardaí, when they arrived on the scene, the Gardaí didn't say, oh, that there's a lot of damage there, he's made.
No.
Give me the details.
If that was, Joe, they wouldn't go away. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was very minor. Now,
and when the two lads, your son and the injured party, shook hands, were they standing on the road?
Oh, they were standing on the road, yes.
No, I mean the injured party wasn't trapped in the car or unable to stand up.
No, the two of them got out and they spoke. They must be when the guards were there and the guards said, I can see your socks, so they went away. No blame to the guards. They went away because she looked, it was a minor, very minor. We thought until we got this deal.
But as you say, it went up 100-fold from the damage to the car to the actual payout by the insurance company went up 100-fold from 400 quid just over to 40,000.
I'd just like to know, have anyone any opinions on it? And,
the main people that have an opinion on it are the insurance company. I'm sure people have an opinion on it, but whether we can air them or not is another thing.
But surely he can
look for a breakdown. As I say, you've tried to get on the insurance company, join the queue. Now, I had a slip recently and the damage to the other car, which I could not see, by the way, but that's neither here nor there. The damage came to something like 400 quid. So the damage in this case is 425 quid and 58 cents. That is not much damage to a car.
And I just like to say, Joe, it wasn't the new car he was driving or anything like that. That's all I'm saying about that.
Okay, well,
you know what I'm saying.
So this is the breakdown of the money that the insurance company paid up, which, by the way, we're all paying in our exorbitant insurance fees in Ireland, the highest in Europe. Vehicle damage, 425 quid, 58 cent. Write this down. Personal injury, we've no hand doctor part in that. That's medical and sorted out. Personal injury, it comes to 15,000 euro exactly. Exactly. Every other figure is a different. Own solicitor fee, in other words, your solicitor fee for the insurance company, was 7,379 euro and 65 cent. Third party, the injured party solicitor's fee, came to 15,920 euro and 05 cent. The investigation fees, which I, looking at this figure, it's about an hour's work, I'd say, for an investigator. Yeah. So there was no big hunt for your son or whatever. Investigation fees, 584 euro and 25 cent. And other fees, we presume they're for the phone calls that were never answered. Other fees, 615 euro, comes to Watch it go from 4,425 euro to 39,924 euro and 53 cents. What can you do? Can you go to the insurance ombudsman?
I honestly don't know. He's in Sweden or working at the moment.
He's working on it.
But this is not, for youngsters, you know, it's not a good sign to be sitting out there like, you know.
Please be assured. You know, please be assured that we've settled this claim on the best possible terms. Was your son? Yeah. Was your son at all involved in the claim? Did they contact him and say?
No. He got. There was no court case, Joe. This is the thing. There was no court. It was all probably letter to letter.
Okay. Well, that's all I can suggest you do at this stage. And we'll get on to the insurance company with your permission.
Yes.
Whether we'll get through to them and ask them how a damage to a car of 425 quid can end up with them paying out 40,000 quid to the other side.
That would be fine, Joe.
Okay. Okay, what age is your son?
He's 27, Joe.
27. Oh, that's very demoralising, isn't it?
It is for everyone, Joe.
Yeah, okay. And has he got any previous claims?
No.
And what type of car was he in?
He was in a BMW, Joe, which he sold now because he's got... Joe, just tell you, he didn't even get his own car repaired because it was so minimum, you know.
Okay, well, that's another entry. He didn't feel the need. There was no need to get his own car. Okay, stay there. 0818-715-815. Michael. Michael.
Hello there. Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
You're listening to Cormac. It went from 400 euro to 40,000 euro. The insurance company paid out. What was it in your case?
It was my daughter actually bumped into someone about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And there was no... To look at, you couldn't see any damage on the car.
Okay.
And recently, she got a letter recently from her insurance that said that the case had been settled.
Okay. Much was the damage to the car?
338 euro.
That's a scratch.
Well, actually, Joe, there wasn't even a scratch on the car.
I don't know the insurance.
Yeah.
338 euro damage to the car. How much did the insurance company pay out?
The insurance company paid out 90,000.
90 grand?
Yeah. 75k to the injured party and 15 and fees.
Okay, well, I'm gobsmacked here. No, I don't know the ins and outs of every claim. None of us do.
Yeah.
We rely on our insurance companies to do their best. What do they say? Please be assured that we settle this claim on the best possible terms. Did you get that note as well? Or did your daughter?
Oh, I don't have that with me, but I assume it's something like that anyway. Yeah, you know.
And when the accident happened or the tip happened?
Yeah.
Was the other party taken away in an ambulance or?
Yep. Yeah, they were. Yeah.
Okay. So they were injured.
Possibly yes. I can't tell whether they were or they weren't.
Okay. Well, they obviously got a doctor to verify, or medics to verify it. Now, can you you reckon the Michael that the solicitor's fees were 15k in that case?
Yeah.
But in this case, solicitor's fees made up exactly half of the payout. Even though it didn't go to court, even though it seemed to be settled fairly quickly, there was no, Cormac's son didn't get any engagement from the insurance company, so there was no to-ing and fro-ing and arguing and meetings and time. But the solicitor's fees in Cormac's son's case came to half the total claim.
Okay.
The solicitor's fees came to 50 times the damage to the car.
And the injured party, Joe, Cormac here again.
Yeah.
The injured party drove away.
Okay.
He wasn't taken away, he drove away.
Okay. But no matter how many times people shout and roar in the Dáil about it, nothing seems to be done.
No.
And Michael, were you tempted? Were you tempted to go to the insurance ombudsman?
Yes.
And did you go? Did your daughter?
No. We just advised that we kind of be wasting our time, you know. Because within days of the accident, my daughter got notification that the injured party had been to the solicitor.
Okay, which is their right. They can do that.
Oh, absolutely, of course, yeah.
Okay.
With a letter accompanying saying that this person may be affected in the future by their injuries.
Yeah.
You know, there was no specified, on that letter anyway, there was no specified injuries.
Okay, well, that's something could have emerged later on. Okay, and Michael, was your daughter injured in the tip?
No, no.
And Cormac, was Shane injured in the tip?
No.
Did Shane wake up the next day with a sore neck or?
No.
A strained clavicle.
The only time he was injured was when he got the letter.
He was injured, nearly killed him. 400 euro goes to 40 grand. And in Michael's case, 400 euro damage to a car goes to 40 grand in a settlement. I know it's not straightforward, but half of that was legal fees. 338 damage in Michael's family's case goes to 90 grand and 15k in legal fees. Okay, Michael and Cormac, stay safe, travel safe. Joe at RTE.ie, 51551 is the text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Anthony Hall, do you see yourself as a whistleblower at this stage? Because what you're saying about the industry you're involved in, the taxi industry and the National Transport Authority, who are the sheriffs, so to speak, well, they get all the registration fees and the government money to run the taxi industry. But what are you saying? You're saying the industry is chaotic. What happened last week in Limerick?
Hello, Joe. Good afternoon to you. Yeah, Joe, I'm in the industry about 16 years now.
Okay.
And, you know, I heard about it yesterday about the non-taking of credit card payments from from passengers.
Well, we were told that from the 1st of September, the National Transport Authority granted pretty significant increase to taxi drivers on condition. Of course, we knew there was no condition. Mm-hmm. On condition that they accepted, everyone accepted cashless payments, which is very, in other words, contactless payments, which is very straightforward these days. And the number of calls we've got from people saying taxi drivers are telling them their machine is broken, they're out of range, or just simply saying to them, no, I don't take contactless, but there's nothing you can do about it. Do taxi drivers take credit cards?
From the 1st of September this year, they're obliged, and legally, they are supposed to take credit cards and debit cards. Now, as of Revolut payments, I'm not sure on that one.
It's contactless as well. But
it's contactless as well. But just for instance, like in Limerick last week, you had they called it Freshers Week, which was three weeks delayed from the students, and all the first year students were back in Limerick. And now there's about roughly around 20,000 students in Limerick, and I was working those unsociable hours with them, and it was very, 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 very busy. Absolutely, you know, a very busy night. It was two nights in particular, Monday night and Thursday night. And it wasn't too bad when we got to the likes of the University of Limerick and Mary Eye and LIT picking up people because the taxis were ordered and people were getting in. But it was a different story then when the drivers were going into town after 12 o'clock at night picking up passengers because taxis were pulling up. Students were going up to the door of the window of the taxi, knocking on the window.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see by the body language, do you take cards?
Yeah.
And I seen the student would walk away, no card. And then they'd come up to me, do you take a card? I do, which I have done for the last 5 years.
Good man, yeah.
5 years I've been doing it. Got my sum up card for free now and quite happy to use it. Pay the commission and everything else goes through the bank accounts. But the passenger was getting into me and I says, why didn't they pick you up?
Yeah.
Oh, he said he'd no card machine, he says. And, you know, straight away, the passenger walked away, and that was it. Because most of the students now, tap, tap, tap. The days of the coins are all gone. It's all tap, tap, tap down, and on account with the likes of free now. So, you know, every second car in Limerick was doing that night.
There's no policing of that, is there?
There's no, Joe. That's what I'm
and they were all they were all charging the new fare. Which, by the way, the National Transport Authority said the fares when they did their big PR blitz about the increase in fares. They said the fares were going up by 12%. Well, they went up by much more than 12% because
they went up by 12%, Joe. But that's a different issue again.
Yeah, but they went. But in fairness to taxi drivers. And to customers, the initial charge for a journey, they say, go from 380 to 420. At premium times, it goes from 380 to 480. Now, what they don't tell you is they use the word premium, but premium is 96 hours of the week. That's more than 50% of the week is on a premium fare.
That's correct, yes.
More than 50. So how they can call it a premium fare when it is for the majority of the week is beyond me. The initial fare, just to be clear, the initial fare there went up 25%, not 12%.
Yeah, but the initial fare in the beginning was I don't work the data. But at night time, it started at 4.20. It then went to 4.80.
But that's more than 12%, and then
there's
figures are going. But and then they keep saying, when they were announcing this, that's the maximum fare.
That's the maximum.
It's not the maximum fare. It's the minimum fare.
It's the minimum fare. That fare starts.
They abuse the English language. It is the minimum fare because I've yet to be in a taxi, and I have very pleasant taxi journeys, and they're essential. But I've not yet to be in a taxi where the fare came to €25 and the taxi driver said, leave it at 15.
No. So
just to be clear with the national, whatever they call it, National Transport Authority, that quango, it is the minimum fare we're talking about, not the maximum fare.
Yes. Yeah, but you have to take in consideration now, Joe, about the fares as well, that's the first time since 2018.
I know that the fares have increased. Yeah, but I wish they should be done on a straightforward basis, not telling us these are maximum fares.
We're getting back to the point, Joe, of what I was saying about is what the National Transport Authority. It's the taxi business is the most regulated business, but the most unregulated business in the country.
Okay.
You know, we were there now, our meters all had to be changed there.
Yeah, you pay. And
before the 1st of September, we had to pay €120.
You have to pay for that.
Yes, and then we had to pay €86.10 to the Atlas to calibrate the meters. Yeah. So that was over €200. So at the end of the day, you had to pay over €2,000 to get your 12% pay increase back. Now, all those meters are done, everything else is done. But that's what I'm trying to say, Joe. The business is totally underregulated because I'm in the business 16 years. I worked doing social blowers. I've been stopped four times in that period of time, checked by the regulator, and everything else was in order. Now, I've seen things, Joe, overall between the drivers and what's going on. And it's very unfair to the likes of the students especially. And I take a lot of blame there to do with the National Transport Authority with the unregulation. And secondly, the other thing I have to do is to blame the education societies, the universities and so forth, that they're not educating the students at night time and how much taxi fares should cost. I had an instance there last week. I had four young girls. I picked them up inside in town or dropped them back to the University of Limerick. And I gave them the fare. It came out at €18. Okay?
Yeah.
Picked them up off the street. They said to me, that's very cheap. I said, well, no, that's the meter price there. The standard fare, as you said, the minimum fare, or the maximum fare, and the €3 extra for each of the extra students, the three students. And I says, why is it? Oh, we got a taxi into town earlier on tonight, and he charged us €10 each. You charge them €40.
€40, okay.
Over double the price.
Yeah, we have a statement from the National Transport. They only seem to do interviews when they're one-to-one interviews, and they won't talk to the people who pay their wages.
But anyway,
they expect me to read out this one-page title. I haven't. I'm losing the will to live here.
Yeah.
They say 92% of tax. This is the NTA. 92% of taxi drivers in Ireland already have payment card terminals in their taxis by choice. But from the 1st of September, every taxi in Ireland must accept credit and debit cards as well as cash. It is the passenger's choice.
It's the passenger's choice.
Drivers may not charge, but you're saying, in your experience, fellow taxi drivers aren't taking credit cards.
They're not taking them, Joe. I see it last week and I don't have CCTV in my vehicle, but if I did have it, you'd be shocked if I was going in front of me.
This is just to people. Where a taxi driver has refused to accept a cashless payment, or where the driver fails to have a functioning cashless payment device for a journey, the customer should make a complaint to the NTA.
Yes, but they don't, Joe. There's no point. Because the NTA, it shouldn't be in a situation where the customer should have to make a complaint. The taxi industry should be in such a position.
Customer complaints can be submitted to through the taxi compliments and complaints form on the Transport for Ireland. This is another one. The NTA, Transport for Ireland, they're all the same. Transport for Ireland website. The complaint will be investigated, and if an offence has been committed, a fine will be issued. Does anyone put in a complaint about?
They don't. People don't bother. They don't bother about any putting in complaints, Joe, because they're not followed up. I had an incident there Saturday night. Another incident. I picked up four young ladies. They're at a hotel in County Limerick.
Point. County Limerick.
They were in a hotel, lovely hotel in County Limerick. They're right away, and they were going back to another hotel, which was a sister hotel of the one they were in.
Yeah.
I picked them up. I brought them. The minute they got into the taxi, they says, "It's a lovely, clean taxi. Lovely smell here on this taxi."
Yeah.
I says, "Why?" So there, we got into a taxi earlier on tonight, and they were all dressed up. And they said, "By the time they got out of the taxi, they felt like going into the shower." They said the taxi was filthy with the dirt. There was a smell of BO off the driver.
Okay.
They went to pay him by credit card, and he wouldn't take a card. He took cash only.
Just to go back to Freshers Week, which the NTA and the TFI and the GAA and the FBI they all knew the Freshers Week. What time is the last bus in Limerick?
The last bus in Limerick into town is roughly around 12 o'clock. But the students don't travel by bus, Joe, because the bus in the university goes around a certain area. It doesn't go down on the college campus and all that.
Why not? There's 20,000 students in
there. 20,000 students. They don't do a job because you see the girls
that's
are coming
their
out.
Job.
All dolled up.
See, the same crowd that run the buses, run the taxis, run the trains, run the Lewis.
Yeah, but they're draw like the young ones come out there and they're all dressed up and the lads come out.
I'm thinking about getting home, especially in Dublin recently.
Yeah,
why don't Transport for Ireland, who run the taxis and keep saying there's not enough taxis, why don't they say to Dublin Bus, stop? The main image you see in Dublin every night at 11:30, every night at 11:30 for the last 60 years, 70 years, is empty, brand new buses scurrying back to the garages empty. While people are standing at bus stops and taxi ranks. Now, they're all run by... Why don't Transport for Ireland double the fare if you want at 11:30 and keep the buses going till 3 o'clock? They'll come back in saying we've a night link, which is one bus in about six routes every hour. One bus every hour. It's a joke.
That's okay, Joe. You could have 80 people on one of the...
Oh, brilliant. That's why it's brilliant.
Great idea.
There should be three buses.
They're all dropped off at one bus stop, Joe, but you still might have 2 kilometres to go home.
I know, but still, it's better than nothing. My point is, a Transport for Ireland are in control of all of this.
They're not doing the job.
Last week they fined, I don't know where the money goes, by the way, they fined Lewis Dublin Bus, which is a great service, and the Lewis is a great service. They've only two lines, but it's a great service. They actually fined those two great companies a couple of million euro each for missing a bus stop or something, where they should have been saying to those great companies, is anyone willing, would you be willing to keep the buses running till 1 o'clock in the morning?
Yes.
You be willing to do the night link every 15 minutes instead of every hour?
There's so many issues, Joe, in the taxi industry, and I'll give another perfect example of what's going on. The 10-year rule on the vehicles. Yeah. I have a 171 vehicle outside the door.
Yeah.
I keep it in pristine condition. I went in last Tuesday to get my meter sealed by the E-Plus, which cost me €86.10, a 171 vehicle. I met a man in there with exactly the same vehicle, which was a year younger, 182.
Okay.
That vehicle was classed as a Hackney in County Clare. So I was speaking to him, got to him a couple of minutes with despair, I was talking to him, and I said to him, "What's the age roll on your vehicle?" "There's no age limit on my vehicle."
"Yeah."
"And what about the tinted windows?" "Oh, there's no problem with the tinted windows. But that's a Hackney, Joe."
"Yeah.
My taxi is, my vehicle is classed as a taxi. There's a 10-year rule on it where I have to be off the road in another 5 years' time. And I'm not allowed to have with tinted windows in it. So what's the difference between a Hackney and a taxi?"
Yeah.
If the whole system needs to be seriously, seriously reviewed and overhauled. And that's the honest no job, because we have school buses. I live in a rural area here. There's a school bus passes here, Joe. I saw it last week. It's 32 years old. School bus for the kids. Wheelchair access taxis are allowed 15 years on the road.
Yeah.
And a taxi is only allowed 10 years on the road. What's the difference between a wheelchair taxi and a normal taxi?
And we also know that cars now are much longer life than they've ever had.
They have, yes. And the minister for transport last week extended the 10-year rule. But what about the people that had their vehicles off the road for 2 years, sitting outside the door, but they lost 2 years of business?
Okay, let me.
It's 4 years. You know, it's totally the whole industry has to be certainly dissected and sorted out, because it's crazy what's going on.
But we're coming up to the Christmas period now.
Oh, sure, yes, another one.
What are we waiting on? Some young woman or some young man to be attacked because they couldn't get a taxi and they're walking miles home. Anyway, Anthony, thanks a million. That's Anthony Hall in Limerick, 0818715815. Before the break, James, insurance claim, what happened?
Joe, how are you?
Good. What happened?
Good. Similar, I turned on your show and this man came on. Unfortunately, I didn't get to the gist of the end of his conversation. You had to turn down the radio in order to get onto yourself. But I had a similar situation, probably a slightly worse situation, if it need said. Bank Holiday Monday, Dublin City Marathon in 2011. I'm entitled, like that previous guy, I'm a taxi driver, and I picked up a lady going out to Dublin Airport who unfortunately knew nothing about the Dublin City Marathon, and she didn't allow herself an extra couple of hours to get there. She was under pressure and the whole lot. So I've been in the business a long time. I know the streets of Dublin well, and I tried to manoeuvre my way around the roadblocks and the whole lot. I ended up in a specific situation where I found a shortcut through, I thought was a shortcut through, and I met a security guy who had stopped me and says, no, you can't go through here today because of the marathon and the whole lot. Now, I went to put the car into reverse, and what I didn't realise was these two individuals at that time, it was 2011, this car was about a 97 or 98 Mazda. It was a rust bucket of a thing. He'd been drunk of a car, but they'd followed me. And they were sitting about 2 or 3 feet behind me, and I talked to the security guard, no, can't go through. So I put the automatic into reverse. I was driving a Merc at the time, basically rolled back very slowly, and next minute, bump, I looked in my mirror, and there was this car behind me, and I had literally, from the car stopped to go about 2 or 3 feet.
How much was the damage?
I'll get to that in 1 second. Yeah, very, very briefly. We all got out of the car. No harm done. Everything was fine. Good luck. Everybody went their merry way. I rang the insurance company an hour later. I told them what happened exactly.
Yeah, good man.
Guy in the insurance company said, no problem. Thanks for ringing us now, but there's no issue there. 10 months later, I went to renew my insurance policy, and lo and behold, my no claim was gone. One claim against you, and to give you the details. Personal injury claim by two individuals, and one got 13,000, the other got just under 11,000. And I knew nothing about it. I heard nothing from the insurance company until I went to renew my claim. So straight away, like blood boiling, I rang them and I went through them for a shortcut on the phone as to why they paid this thing out. And I said, I explained to you that I hit that car at about 2 miles an hour. I didn't hit them from behind. I hit them from the front. Okay. So it's no possibility. I said there's an impossibility, absolutely 1,000%, that there was no damage to the car and there was certainly no damage to the individuals in the car. So why in Jesus' name did you pay that policy out and why didn't you contact me to say that you were? And he said, well, we own the policy and it's if you read your policy, they have the rights. And the reason he said basically we pay out is because their insurance companies are fearful of going into court because it depends on the judge you get. It would cost the insurance company three times that to go into court.
Yeah,
if they lose.
In the case we had earlier, the legal fees, it didn't go to court.
But,
and the damage to the vehicle was €400 and the legal fees came to 24 and a half grand. Anyway.
Well, I don't know. Well, all I know is this. It did not mention any claim for damage to a car because you couldn't damage it. It was such a heap of junk of a car.
Okay.
But it was just, it basically just said two individuals, two claims, blah, 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 and this was the amount. And that was the end of it.
Well, it wasn't the end of it because your premiums and our premiums and everyone's premiums have been shooting up.
Yeah. It was just two individuals.
Let me bring Lisa in. Lisa, what happened? Lisa? Quick break and then we
Hello.
Go to Lisa. Yeah, Lisa, what happened?
How are you? Well, I was in a load of traffic and it was inching along and I tipped the car in front.
Yeah.
He actually stopped and, well, obviously it was my fault. But there was no damage whatsoever. I immediately got out and I just said to the man, I'm sorry, you know. And he said to me that, get me an ambulance, he said. So I couldn't believe because there was no damage whatsoever to his car or to my car. Anyway, I was trying to contact him, you know, after because I'd taken his number to see was he okay. Like the guards came and everything was fine, you know, like they told me not to be worrying. But anyway, the next day I eventually got him and he said, oh, I'm fine. He says, there's no problem. Just give me £60, he says, and we call it quits.
Okay.
So anyway, just to get rid of, you know, I got such a fright that could I have harmed the man, you know?
Okay, cool.
But anyway, that was fine. My husband dropped that into him and everything was fine. A year and 10 months later, I got a letter from the injury board to say that this man had put a claim in, but they had refused it. But that doesn't mean, you know, that he didn't go to your insurance. So the next I knew, I got my insurance renewed, and I discovered then that they had paid him $20,000.
Okay.
For absolutely nothing.
Okay. When he got out, did he get out of the car when he said ring the ambulance?
No, ring the ambulance. Oh, he didn't move, and it was on a very busy road, and the ambulance came, the guards came. You know, I was saying, oh my God, there'd be heart attacks on the road because of the delay, you know.
Well, I say you nearly had a cardiac when you heard that the
I couldn't believe
but you weren't told that they'd given him that they paid out €20,000 until you paid your increased premium. Okay,
they
Lisa.
Never investigated the thing at all.
Okay, thanks indeed, Lisa. 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
As you may know, there is a blockade of Lidl and Aldi in Cavan Town by egg farmers. Shane, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
You're upset by this blockade by farmers. Why?
They're stopping our rights being able to go in their own shopping in our chosen stores. Things are tight at the moment, Joe, as everybody knows. But there's no food in the shelves to avail of in Lidl or Aldi and Cavan at the moment. And we have to try shop elsewhere, but it's burning into
What's not getting into the shops? Into Aldi and Lidl and Cavan?
All their stock. They can't get it in, Joe.
Everything.
The shelves are bare.
So the two stores, are they still open?
They're still open, according to talking to the Lidl yesterday. Yes, they're still open. They don't want to send the staff home. They're hoping the blockade will be cleared and they get the stock back in. They just can't move anything into it at the moment.
But you can't get a litre of milk or a bit of bread or a bit of meat or a bit of...
No.
So there's no deliveries?
No deliveries, Joe.
And what happens when a delivery truck arrives?
apparently, talking to the staff in the store, the farmers protesting have it blocked off with tractors.
So your point in contacting us is what? Do you think the protest is unfair? You think they should just stop eggs going in, Rad, which is the product they're complaining about?
Yeah, they shouldn't be allowed to stop the shops being stocked and for customers being able to avail of shopping where they can afford to shop, Joe. There's no produce going into the shops at all. Nothing.
And I don't want the names of any other shop, but you went to other shops, did you?
Yeah, I had
to. Well, you have no choice.
I had to put food on the table. I had to get nappies for the kids.
And do you plan your shop every week? Do you need Aldi and Lidl? You do, obviously.
We do, yes, Joe. Especially at this day and age. We're all struggling trying to meet bills. Every cent counts.
So how do you think the farmers should protest if they want to protest?
They can protest quietly, Joe, but don't obstruct the delivery of goods into the stores.
Okay, well, Brendan Soden is the Vice Chair of the IFA Poultry Committee. Brendan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Why are you stopping nappies going into Aldi and Lidl?
Firstly off, we'd like to apologise to all customers.
I know that, but I know all that. Why are you stopping nappies going into Lidl and Aldi?
At the minute, the egg price, this is a poultry egg and
what's
pig
eggs?
Meat.
What's eggs got to do with nappies?
That was the reason we are there at the minute to show how we are being driven out of business.
And what does the blockade consist of?
The blockade consists of not allowing produce into the shop at the minute.
And how do you achieve that?
That's just as that gentleman said. The loading bay is blocked at the moment.
Oh, the loading. So no, nothing can get into the store.
No, not on the loading.
Customers can get in and walk around, Joe.
Sorry, Shane.
Customers can go in and walk around the shop, but like there's nothing in the shop.
Yeah, but you go. You
only very upset staff. Very disgruntled customers.
And how long has the protest been going on for, Brendan?
Unfortunately, we're now in day six. Nobody from Aldi or Lidl seems to want to speak to us.
And how long will it go on for?
I don't know. That's sort of we really don't want to be there ourselves.
But you are where you are. How long will it go on for?
Once Aldi or Lidl comes back to engage with us, that's all we want. We want to talk to them.
But from reading what's there, Brendan, the deal with the egg suppliers, it's through the packaging agency. It's not with Lidl or Aldi. They buy from the packaging agency.
Oh, they do, yeah.
So why are you blockading the shop?
Because ultimately the shop is the person where the money comes down from through the whole chain.
Deal with packaging agencies. You shouldn't be stopping supply of groceries to shops that people in the Cavan area rely on.
Oh, I understand that. We are customers of them two retailers at the minute. And we are the same as yourself. We couldn't shop in them at the weekend, but
You're standing outside obstructing everyone else's shopping.
I know.
I had to go off to different shops the weekend, and it cost me my budget for next week and the following week.
You've been placed on hold. Please wait.
Okay, someone pressed a button there. Let me take a quick break. I'll come back after.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
There's a blockade by farmers. Tractors and trailers are blocking the loading bays in Aldi and Lidl for the last 6 days in Cavan Town. Shane contacted us. The stores are empty, obviously. He normally does his shopping between the two of them, from nappies to everything else. He said his weekly bill, because he can't use Aldi and Lidl because it's open but it's empty, has gone up by something like 60 quid. Shane, is that correct? What has your weekly bill gone up when you can't shop around?
Well, it's only been this week, Joe. So far, I have exceeded this week's shopping bill, including today. We had to get more bits and pieces in locally in the local shop. We spent another 70 euros, so it's 140 euros it's gone up by.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what would you say to Brendan? Brendan's saying it's the only option we have, and we want to apologise.
Brendan, stop putting their produce into the packaging companies that have been paid and contracted by Lidl.
Okay, Brendan, can you sell your eggs to anyone else?
No, Aldi's buy, there is five major egg packers or egg suppliers in the country.
Okay.
And they all supply Aldi and Lidl. So they are placed in a tendering process every year and they have to tender for the contract. So we have no option. We are selling to these companies and they have to sell to supermarkets.
At least there'll be essentials on the shelves in the shops for us to purchase.
Do you have to stop everything going in, Brendan? That's Shane's point. You're protesting about the price of eggs.
Well, and chicken and pork at the minute.
Yeah, but chicken and pork don't wear nappies, for example.
No, well, we don't want to be where we are. We've been trying to talk and engage with Lidl for the last number of months, and nothing has come out of it. And we definitely do not want to be there, but they will not listen to us. We are slowly being driven out of business. And like this gentleman, I have a young family here, and I'm trying to make a living for them. Like he said, he was struggling with his salary every week and having to do a budget. We do exactly the same here. But unfortunately, every month that goes by in the poultry business, my wages gets less and less. In fact, now next week, I am starting to slowly get out of business by closing a shed. I have five poultry sheds here, and I have to let all my staff have been let go now at this stage.
Yeah.
And we were just having a very small ask for Lidl and Aldi of 2 cents an egg back to the farmer. And they have just ignored us completely.
Well, for instance there, Brendan, like, I support Irish farmers and local farmers. I don't actually buy my eggs in Lidl or Aldi. I buy my eggs off a local supplier, direct.
Yeah.
To support them. But I can't go and buy my essentials from a local supplier. If you're stopping going into the stores that I can afford, I can get nappies elsewhere. But different shops carry different brands, and there could be 3 times the price. I can't afford that. I need to put food on the table, heat in the house, and now and again, maybe turn on the lights, but put the kids to bed early, so don't have to have the lights on.
Yeah, well that's why we're exactly the same as you. That's what we're not a big bad entity out there. We are exactly the same as you, and that's what I'm saying. We are customers in there, and we are feeling you're paying every bit as much as our own.
Or to shopping.
Have the guard even down to you?
No, they have passed by us all right, and they have called in.
Because I'm thinking if that was a group of animal rights activists blocking the loading bay into Aldi and Lidl and stopping trucks delivering nappies and eggs and everything else under the sun, I'd say the Gardaí would be fairly quick now in shifting them, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but we're a peaceful...
So are the animal rights people. They're very peaceful.
And we are just there trying to... We're only there trying to protect our livelihoods and our occupations. That's all we're there for. We're not there to upset everybody, but it's these companies have decided that over the years,
I know nobody wants to see that, but Aldi have they not issued a statement saying they will increase the price they pay for every egg?
They have issued an increase, but it was looked for in July, and the world has changed a lot since July. Costs have increased unbelievably since July, and what they've given now has been outstripped. That we're still in a negative position.
You see, were you down at the ploughing, Brendan? You were.
I was. Yeah.
Okay. Did you go into the Aldi tent?
No, I didn't. No.
And the little tent. Aldi was there, and I know because Mike Denver was performing there. I was also on air. But the Aldi tent was heaving with Irish produce.
Yeah.
I have no connection with Aldi. Now, are they spoofing?
No.
What are all those Irish producers doing in the Aldi tent if they're all being ripped off?
Aldi and Lidl do not pay direct to the farmer. They pay through the packaging agency. The packaging agency pays the farmers for the supply. So put your tractor outside the packaging agency factory and stop the supply of eggs or poultry.
What do you think of that point, Brendan?
The packaging companies, as I said, have to tender every year for the contract. So you have a number of different companies bidding basically for that contract. So, and so when you have that many units, you know there's only one way a price can go. I can't, I'm quoted a price from my packer every year. I have to take what I'm given. I can't say I want this much. I am given, have to take what I am given. I don't set a price. So if Aldi forces the suppliers to bid between each other and price is driven down because that's the model they run, I have to, my price is in relation to that. So my price is tightened. But my costs continue to rise outside of that bubble. And that's where the problem has arisen over the last number of years. And it's come to the point now.
But then we should see between the two of them, Aldi and Lidl, they've about, 400 stores now in Ireland, haven't they? Give or take, yeah. But why aren't farmers outside every store?
Because it seems to be, because if you watch the ads on television at night and the papers, everybody seems to have been forced to price match Aldi. That's, and we see the Lidl ads every night as well with the trolley at, say, of €72 less than Super Value or Dunn Stores. And it there's a war going on between retailers at the minute and suppliers and producers.
You're saying the farmers are the casualties. Okay.
Yeah.
Shane.
Yes, Jeff.
Like, what do you think of Brendan's argument? There's a war going on between the different supermarkets and...
Well, I've never seen Brendan's argument, but, like, there's different ways of going about it. He's blocking supply chains into essential shops. Like, during COVID, the shops and the distribution companies bent over backwards to keep stock in stores when there was a rush on things, people were panic buying.
That's a good point, actually, fairness to them, yeah. Okay, so Andrew Donbass, your point, please, Andrew. You're a beef and dairy farmer.
Yes, Joe, I'm a beef and dairy farmer. And look at, you know, my point is, I attended the ploughing there a couple of weeks back and have been attending it for
did
the
you
last...
Went, did you go into the massive Aldi tent?
I didn't because I just couldn't get in there.
It was so busy.
You know, the throngs that were around there. And, you know, I kind of said to myself coming away from it, you know, that's the last year I'll be at the ploughing while the big retailers are trying to take it over. Because, you know, it's kind of gone from showcasing what we are buying for to keep the farms running, you know.
Okay.
You know, I suppose also, look, at I've nothing to do with poultry, but look, what I would like to hear in the debate is, you know, how much the poultry farmer is really making out of the final price of the egg.
Well, very little, according to Brendan. That's
exactly, yeah. Now, I'd love to hear the figures. I'd like to hear the figures.
Then how much are you getting per egg, Brendan?
We are getting the eggs are on a greater basis. We are receiving about 8, 9, 10 cents an egg.
Okay.
Yeah.
The lamb farmers protest. They protest outside the factory. Not outside Lidl or Aldi.
Yeah, well, that's on a different note with lamb or with beef. The export market is there, so the customers are abroad. The thing with the eggs is that the eggs are 100% within the Irish market. That's the way the system runs. So every egg that is produced on the island of Ireland is sold in the retailers here. So there is no outside influence on that.
You need to pick it outside your packaging company. They're the ones that pay you.
The supermarkets are the ones that, as I said before, make them tender for the contract. It's like anybody else bidding for a job.
If you're not letting eggs or chicken go into the factories, then there's no eggs or chicken. Then you have your basis to negotiate.
Yeah, well, AFA met with senior Aldi officials at the ploughing match, and they were made well aware of what the situation we were in, but unfortunately nothing happened until we were there last.
So you get 9 or 10 cents, but I was in Super Value yesterday, actually. I don't have Aldi or Lidl where I live. But the Super Value, and it's the same for Nolan's, the great independent supermarket as well. An egg is about 20 cents, if you work it out. You know, a decent-sized egg. So where's the 10 cent going, Brendan?
Well, that's on packaging costs for the supplier.
Distribution
costs have to be taken into that. It is quite a costly to package. Now, I wouldn't have figures on that because I'm not involved in that.
Okay.
I only know what we get. I don't know what the margin would be for supermarkets.
How long are you going to stay on the protest?
If Aldi and Lidl come to us and engage, we are more than willing to engage with them at this stage.
But do they negotiate you with the loading bay, or do they negotiate with you on the Nace Road and
we're quite willing to meet them anywhere. If they want to meet, we are more than willing because we do not want to be there.
Have they said that to you, we can't keep paying our staff when we're not getting a shilling in the door?
Well, the problem is the farmers can't continue to keep going and the wheel is empty shelves because the farmers won't be here.
Okay. Well, mind yourselves. And Shane, you might hopefully it'll be settled. Aldi say we have engaged with the farmers, but they haven't agreed with our offer so far. Okay. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie and 51551 is the text. And we're back to Padraig Pio briefly. And yesterday's programme definitely engaged people. And I've known that there's a special devotion to Padraig Pio in Ireland. Father Brian Shortlow is with the Capuchins in Dublin, has been for a long time. And he is national, what would you call yourself, Brian? National Director for the...
The National Director for the Padraig Pio Apostolate, Joe.
Okay, how popular is Padraig Pio in Ireland and why?
He is extremely popular and has been for probably at least 50 years since he died, and even more before that. You know, there are so many people who have encountered him and met him, so many people who have had experiences with the devotion to Padraig Pio. I mean, like, just recently we had we re-ran the pilgrimage to Knock, which was established by Eileen McGuire of the Irish Office for Padraig Pio, who retired in 2018. It was established, the pilgrimage to Knock, in 1979, and we re-established that after the pandemic and the lockdowns, and we had 400 people for the 400 members of the prayer groups for the retreat on the Saturday, the 17th and 18th of
How many Padraig Pio prayer groups are there in Ireland?
Padraig Pio prayer groups were set up many, many years ago in Italy. We have about 77 prayer groups, roughly around the country. Now, some of them are kind of, very weak because, people were older and things like that. But my job now is to try and re-engage with them, Joe,
And my point I was making yesterday, in these awful, worrisome, anxious times, do people turn to religion and do they turn to relics and artefacts?
Oh, absolutely. A relic, Joe, is just a sort of a kind of a tangible, a reminder of somebody. I mean, in the world or out there, you would have like Roy Keane's jersey or Larry Mullen's drumsticks. People like souvenirs. People like to hold something of somebody that means something. So in a religious sense, a relic is also, something that belongs to the saint. And we would have relics of St. Pio here that would have been given to the shrine here from the priests in San Giovanni, particularly Father Alessio and Father Gerardo, given over the years, and also to individual people up and down the country. We have many, many relics.
And we heard yesterday about the myths.
Yeah.
What other relics of Padraig Pio do you have?
Well, the one of the things that came over a few years ago, actually, which people were able to see and were able to kind of photograph and just feel close to, in terms of devotion, was the habits, one of the religious habits that he wore,
Okay. And what else would we have,
things like, people would have, we have little rosaries here that people, little holy pictures, the little crosses, devotional items that people can kind of just hold and pray with, Again, it's just to connect. It's just a way of connecting with the saint. Now, remember, of course, Joe, it's not about, there's nothing magical about the Padraig Pio mitten or any relic. There's no miracles in a mitten. It's Padraig Pio in his life prayed for people. So it's really Jesus is the healer. God is the healer, That's the most important thing.
A lot of people, they were extraordinarily sincere, as all in their beliefs, as you probably may have heard yesterday. But when people believe that it was a miracle that they were cured, How do you hear that?
Maybe it was, but I mean, I engage, you know, every day.
Do you believe?
I mean,
do you believe in miracles?
I do, yeah. Okay. We're in the miracle business, Joe. You know, I don't mean that in any sort of a sensational, fantastic way.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are healings and there are the things that happen that can't be explained by science. But for the record, the real miracle workers are our nursing staff, our medical staff, our surgical staff, our wonderful chaplains in hospitals. I'm going to 2 hospitals this evening. I've been invited to a hospital tomorrow to bless somebody with the relic. I always do it through the chaplaincy. Never rock up to a church or rock up to a hospital.
Well, we can't do that.
But
I know, but would you say you'd never do it without contacting the chaplain?
No.
Do you do it without contacting the consultant?
The way it is that the consultant obviously would have to be in agreement, and it's done through the chaplaincy department, or the place that provides pastoral care for each patient. So it's through the chaplaincy. They contact me and we do it then, you see.
Are the medics from everyone working in the hospital, from the porter to car park to the consultant and everyone in between, are they not the miracle workers?
They are the miracle workers. I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. Sometimes, though, there are things that cannot be explained, and the medics would say, "Don't know why that happened. We didn't foresee this." But in most cases, Joe, the healing is done by the medical staff, the nursing staff. That's what it is. We just offer a prayer to.
Have you come across Padre Pio miracles in Ireland, Father Brian?
I haven't personally. I've spoken to people who have had, you know, experiences of healings through Padre Pio. I have spoken to them, but like everything else, all that needs to be done and needs to be kind of verified through the kind of the hospital and medical people. Colin Keane's books, actually, Padre Pio, The Irish Connection, and Padre Pio, The Scent of Roses, gives some very, very simple and sincere stories about people who genuinely believed that what happened to them was more than.
Where is the National Shrine to Padre Pio?
Capuchin Friary, Church Street, Dublin 7, Joe, a church that you know quite well.
I know.
Capuchin Day Centre is. It's all on the same campus. So we have it. We have the relics of Padre Pio and the shrine here. And we try to work up and down the country with the prayer groups.
Okay. That's Father Brian Chartle, a Capuchin, and talking about the Padre Pio phenomenon in Ireland, which is a phenomenon. Thanks indeed, Brian. Where is Patrick? Patrick, I've seen the photograph.
Yeah.
Of the scratch on the back of your car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just felt compelled to send in the photos, Joe, when you were on. Yeah.
And how much was paid out?
29,000, that's all that claim came to.
For what?
I don't know, Joe. I got a vague kind of breakdown of what, you know, their legal costs and stuff in the letter I got from the insurance company, but I didn't, you know what I mean? I'm kind of none the wiser, basically.
€29,000. I've tweeted it there and at Joe Liveline during the break when it came in.
I'd love for your listeners to go on and take a look.
It's a scuff. Now, I'm not saying it's scuffs cost £400 or £500. But, like, did you get a breakdown of the 29 grand that the insurance company paid out?
No, not to my satisfaction, no.
To their satisfaction, what did they say?
I don't have the letter in front of me now, Joe.
Was there personal injuries?
Yeah, the other person claimed personal injury, but, I mean, you can tell from the photo.
Were you injured?
No.
Was your car damaged?
I mean, that's the damage. The photos are the damage, you see.
No, is that your car or his car?
That's my car.
Okay.
But you can work out from the photos, like, how much of an accident, in inverted commas, it was, you know.
So you reversed into him, is that it?
Yeah, it was my fault. I'll admit that, like.
And was there any damage to his car?
Very little. Like, I kind of rubbed against his car rather than hit it, if you know what I mean.
Okay, where's Alice? Alice, living next door. Alice, what happened? Stay there, Patrick, there's more people coming in. Go ahead, okay. Alice.
Hi, Joe. I was on holidays in the UK.
Yeah.
4 kids with me.
Yeah.
And travelling behind a vehicle and it was turning right, so I stopped.
Yeah.
And a car came up the side of me.
Yeah.
On the passenger side, and she hit the side of my car, the front of my car.
Okay.
So she was, I called the police.
Yeah.
They came out to me, everybody was okay. I just said, look, I'm only on holidays. We'll forget about it. Fix your own car, I'll fix my own car. Nobody's hurt. And we all agreed. The policeman wrote down her details and got her to sign it and the whole lot, and we went on our merry way. I arrived home 5 days later.
Yeah.
I said I'd give my insurance company a ring just to let them know and inform them. I said, look, it wasn't my fault, but I agreed to fix my own car, just letting you know.
Okay.
Couple of months later, thought no more of it. Couple of months later, I get a letter saying that she was suing me for damages to her vehicle and personal injury.
Yeah.
So I rang the insurance company and I said, there's not a lot we could do with her word against mine. I said, well, if you settle, I will sue you.
You'll sue who?
I'd sue the insurance company. Myself.
You have two chances, but anyway, go ahead, Alice. Yeah.
It was not my fault and I wasn't taking responsibility.
Okay.
So I said, let me know what's happening going forward. So they decided it went to court.
Mm.
So I had to go over to the UK
right.
to court. I went in and the barrister that I met, lovely man, he said, look, it's her word against yours. There's not a lot we can do.
Uh-huh.
I just produced the piece of paper that the policeman had given me on the day of the accident.
Which said, again?
It said her name and address and the place and the time that the accident occurred. And he looked at it and he said, where did you get it? I said, the policeman handed it to me that day. That's all I have. It's the only thing I have. So he said, well, the accident didn't happen there. I said, well, you could tell me the accident happened anywhere. I know nowhere in the UK, but this is what I was told.
Okay.
This is what was written down for me.
Yeah.
So he went off and he came back and he said, she's claiming it happened in a totally different spot.
Right.
So we went into court.
Yeah.
And the judge wanted to see the paper.
Yeah.
And he threw a case out.
Oh, well done.
He just said, or she actually, to the lady judge. But the actual fact, your one case was thrown out. I was awarded costs, which I never got. But the damage to my own car was only about €300. I fixed it. I had no problem. But that's the only way you'll fight the insurance company.
Did you tell your family you were going over to court in England?
Yes. They thought I was mad.
And you rocked up to court on your own in the UK?
Yes.
Fair play to you.
No, because she was wrong, not me.
Okay,
I was letting her away with it. Because I was in a different country, I just didn't want the hassle, and the damage was minimal.
And by the way, it's expensive going to court here. It's expensive in the States. In the UK. Alice, in the last few minutes, Rebecca Vardy has been told to pay Colleen Rooney's legal fees. You know what it comes to? £1.5 million.
Maybe I should go back and look for my legal fees.
Put in your expenses. back tomorrow, 1:45. Sean O'Gorman produced. Ray Darcy's next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.